Now, I hardly need to convince you that this is entertaining.
Two-thirds of the state legislature has to vote to remove the flag.
Two-thirds! Two-thirds! No, that makes sense. You don't want to impulsively take down a 150-year-old symbol for an armed insurrection against the United States of America. Otherwise, I mean, it's mob rule.
Jon Stewart was funny and electrifying to watch because he was immensely talented. Also, satire and cynicism helped to identify and clarify problems in our political and personal lives. But comedy, cynicism, and raging frustration are also ancient stalling tactics built into our social behavior that keep us from confronting difficult problems. Joke now, solve problems later. Rant today about a coworker, but put off that really tough, honest conversation that might really change things as long as you can. Brené Brown, professor of social work at the University of Houston, has deeply researched our capacity to invent stories to keep us from seeing truths that may be threatening. Brené Brown, who has become a TED conference rock star, has a new book, Rising Strong, all about how we prefer our invented stories about ourselves to the vulnerable, scary process of learning who we really are when we fall and have to rise again.
Being ourselves in a world where who we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to say and not say feels dictated every moment of the day is tougher than just be you. And there's a lot that we have to think about. We have to think about shame. We have to think about authenticity. We have to really understand the consequences and the delights of being who we are and being transparent. Most of us, I would imagine, were raised hearing, get out there and give it a try. At this very same time that most of us were raised to believe that vulnerability is weakness. And that's complicated because after, 13 years of research, what I can tell you for sure is that vulnerability is actually our best measure of courage.
You begin this book with a story of something in your own relationship, in your own family, that starts out seeming like, oh, this kind of confessional, emotional story that we've read a million times. But you end up conveying just how much is at stake in every deep relationship, marriage, partnership, father-son, mother-daughter, mother-son. I've never really heard a story that tells how much is at stake every minute in the way that you told that story. What are the lessons you learned there at that crazy lake?
Here's the thing. Anytime we experience anxiety, anger, any kind of fall, I can be, you and I walk out of a meeting and I say, hey, great meeting, John. And you look at me and you roll your eyes and you shrug and off you go. Just in a moment like that, even, our brain is hardwired to make sense of anything that it perceives as an emotional threat. And immediately what we do is our brain scrambles for a pattern or story to make up about what just happened so it can get some clarity on what's going to happen next. And so in that moment, my brain would scramble to say, you know what? I knew John never liked me. I knew he never trusted me. I knew he thought my ideas were bad. He didn't like what I said in that meeting. I just knew it. And when we come up with a story like that to explain something difficult, our brain loves it. It even rewards us. And then the show begins because emotion is in the driver's seat. And thought and behavior are in the backseat, just following along. So the story in the lake was about a conversation Steve and I were having while we were swimming, where in 2 seconds, he did something or said something, and I have this entire narrative made up about, is our marriage okay? What does he think about me? And then I'm really angry, and I'm going into payback mode. This is what we do. So those small minutes and those conversations, I can imagine asking how many listeners have ever been in a conflict with someone and then they walked out of the kitchen or they walked out of your office and you have an entire narrative made up, but you don't know what happened.
Tell me about the West Point officer who, in an experiment about people who are difficult in the office, who are frustrating to other people, and you tell them that, in fact, they're doing the best that they can and they have to respond to that. This West Point officer, this group leader, really took you to task, and it was an amazing result.
Yeah, the question leading this was, do you believe people are doing the best they can? And some said, well, maybe. And a couple said no. And this one man was like, absolutely not. People are not doing the best they can. And then I just said, you know, what if I told you, a person that you believe who works under you, who is not doing the best they can, what if I told you, in fact, they are, this person is indeed doing the best they can. What would that mean for you? And he got very emotional and he said, you know, it would mean move the rock. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, every day I work from the assumption that they're holding back and they're not giving the best because they're either trying to tick me off on purpose or they're being lazy. But if I heard without a doubt that this person is doing the best they could, then I would have to say, I don't think you can make a meaningful contribution in this position. Let's find one where you could. Instead of kicking the rock every day, I would have to move the rock.
Does your research actually suggest that in our brains, we prefer to kick the rock and to hold on to our frustrations rather than have the more challenging conversations about maybe you need a different assignment or how can we improve this or you're making me angry?
It's a really interesting question because I think it actually goes back to vulnerability and our own unwillingness to be uncomfortable. Because the question becomes, what boundaries do you need to have in place in order to maintain your integrity and be generous with others? What we're not good at doing is we're not good at setting boundaries and holding people accountable. What we're better at doing is being resentful and angry and frustrated and wondering why people are trying to frustrate us on purpose, because that takes us out of the driver's seat of having to say, look, here's what works and here's what doesn't work for me, because that requires a lot of courage and vulnerability and the possibility of not being liked.
What do you think the skills are here that will allow people to embrace this failure and come up with a language to have the kinds of revolutions within themselves that you believe that they can have to productively do the kinds of things that, you know, we're taught to be scared of?
I think, you know, we start like this process. I went into the research asking one question. What do men and women who suffer falls, heartbreak, disappointment, failure, those men and women who get back up from those and are even more courageous and have more tenacity, what do they have in common? And really the answer is they're willing to recognize emotion. They know when they've been hooked by something, and they're willing to get curious about what they're feeling before they respond. You know, in a weird way, they kind of hack the neurobiology of falling in the middle of it instead of just going with the worst case scenario and the blaming, angry scenario. They really stop and get curious and say, what do I know for sure about what just happened? And am I willing to really dig in to what's happening and what my response is?
Brené Brown, so much to talk about. The book is Rising Strong, The Reckoning, The Rumble, The Revolution. Thanks so much.
I really appreciate it. Thanks, John.